Welcome to Houndsy, the Steel Army Podcast. I am Dan Yost, and we're talking some numbers today. Season kicks off a day, two from now, whenever you listen to this. We gave you the full two-hour preview and hot takes the other day. Now the other side of the coin, literally. It's time to bet the USL with Mr. Bet the USL, Tim Lawson. Tim, how you been, man?
I have been very good, thank you. The USL season is finally here. Let me tell you, this seems to be, maybe it's because time flies now that I'm a new dad, but like, I feel like just yesterday I was sitting in this seat behind me holding my daughter, just in complete disbelief that Charleston lost the final. But here we are already for a new season.
If it makes you feel any better and or worse, I was sitting at a bar hammered after a Steelers game, hoping to find other action that night, and stunned that Charleston had blown that game.
Dude, I mean, you know the ride that I had with this, but it was a banner year in USL betting in a few ways, but the one that came oh so close. Charleston opens as a 100-1 100-1 odds to win the USL in 2023. That was the longest odds on the board. And to give you some sort of perspective, none of the teams this year opened at 100-1. The longest odds were 75-1. So longest odds last year was 100-1, Charleston. I hit it immediately. Ben Pearman is the truth. I think that he's got to be a top three coach in USL. I'm not sure if anybody would really argue with that, but knowing how well he was going to manage that team and seeing the talent that he was attracting, I was like, this team's a playoff team, and if and 100-1 going into the playoffs, like, that's huge equity. And then by midseason, I was like, oh my god, this is one of the best teams in the league. Like, the East could be theirs to lose. I was so confident in that team, I didn't hedge the whole way through the playoffs. We get to the final, and there was so much equity going into the final, and I actually believed in Phoenix. I was scared of Phoenix the whole way through. I was like, man, if they meet Phoenix, this could be a tough time. And sure enough, it ends up being Phoenix. I took a little bit back because I had so much equity, because I knew that, you know, if it didn't get there, I'd be too upset that I didn't get any piece of it. So I took a little bit on Phoenix going into it. Charleston scores early, and I'm like, money. Like, this is it. Like, they're good. And then at the freaking death, I track this now. I used to not track this. I now, starting this year, I have a notes column in my tracker where I put at the death if my bet was graded with a goal that happened. Because, like, it's amazing. Like, I start to wonder, like, how often does this really happen to me? Anyways, Phoenix gets the equalizer. Now, here's the thing. I win that bet. It was a 90-minute bet on Phoenix plus half the goal. So now I'm like, oh, well, I've won my Phoenix bet. I can still win the Charleston bet.
Time to get both, like, ends of this.
Exactly. Phoenix looks great. It goes to penalties. All right. I've been here before. This is exciting, thrilling, and stressful all at the same time. Trey Muse stops two goals. Charleston scores two goals. I was like, this is it. Like, there's no screwing this up, right? Like, you just need one goal, essentially. And Dan, I watched like a car crash in slow motion. I watched Phoenix score three goals and Charleston not score one more, and I sat there in complete disbelief that my 100-1 ticket on Charleston didn't get home. Here's the thing. I didn't know how many people were tailing me, but I knew that night because they all messed with me. Everybody who had another 100-1 ticket like I did, I got the, oh, brutal. Oh, I can't believe we lost that. Like, people I didn't even know were paying attention. I was like, oh, I didn't know you had that.
You didn't know your influence until all of a sudden that.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So And Dan, this comes after I had SKC at 101 in MLS. They were making a run in the playoffs, and of course they peter off. I had Brian White at 101 for top goal scorer. He gets in within one goal, and then Denise Boenga just goes off on the
last games. Yep.
You know, so I had a handful of these 101s where I was like, man, they're just getting so close and completely unrelated to soccer, but I finally got one. Joseph Flacco, comeback player of the year at 101. That one finally got home. So I'm not going to lie, the Charleston beat doesn't hurt as bad now that one of these long shots is finally. Because before this, my longest score had been 66-1 when I got back when. Why can't I remember the Liga team that beat PSG, that won a title over PSG, I think in 2019, 2020. Why can't I remember the name? I bet on them, for crying out loud. Anyways, help me out here. Make me feel. I don't want to feel like as much
of my European soccer. I deal in third division English leagues right now, man.
So I understand. By the way, tough man. Coventry just knocked the crap out of Rotterdam. No, you're Reading. That's right. You're Reading's your. Anyways. Lille is who I was thinking of. I had them. So, like, I was really excited. Here's this 100-1. Anyways, long story short, it doesn't get there. And then, of course, you know, the book, I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. And it took much longer this time, I think, than it did last time. I felt like we had lines a few weeks out. I feel like we had 10 days, maybe a little more, on Caesars. And they were the only book that opened.
I was going to say, like, the only one I saw so far on my cursory glance on it.
Caesars was the only one that I saw. Betfred, I thought was the other book that opened last year. I haven't seen anything yet. But 75-1 was the longest odds, and it was like the you know who you would expect, like Las Vegas and Hartford. You know they were up there. Teams that just like underperformed and were kind of bottom of the table last year.
Both the teams are going to be better this year.
Both of those teams are absolutely going to be better this year. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, well, Hartford should be better, but they can still be very fraudulent just because of who they are.
Don't say that, because I have a position on Las Vegas this week.
No, I think Vegas is Hartford that.
Think Hartford would be fraudulent?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I misunderstood.
Do you see they released the guy today? That they picked up from Detroit in a trade in January, and they released him today.
Come on, they can't do this.
Hartford got a Hartford man.
Man, they used to. What was it? I used to message you this. What was it 2021? They were the bane of my existence, man. I can't, like, they were a team that, like, if I faded them, they showed up. If I faded them, they showed up. If I backed them, they couldn't win. It was awful. But I mean, it's hard to argue with the management change and some of the personnel changes. And you would like to think, I mean, they're one goal underdogs. You know, they're catching a full goal this week. And it's tough to, I mean, El Paso, of course, is expected to be a strong team, but is El Paso really a full goal favorite against Hartford and that squad? That's the tough part.
I mean, not jumping ahead here, but El Paso comes on the team that I think is a bit overvalued from a lot of people right now. I don't know.
Yeah, I've someone I respect took them in the futures market, so I can't. I don't know what to make of that, but I agree. I think El Paso is a strong team that I don't think, you know, I don't know if they're really ever going to get. They're not going to. I don't know if they'll ever go from good to great. You know what I mean? Like I think, and I think they're. I think there's always times of the year where they're perceived as a great team. But, you know, Diego Luna's not coming through that door no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah.
That's
By the way, I love watching him at RSL. Like, the USL fan inside of me, like, just gets so much excitement out of watching him.
He's good for straight entertainment value.
Yeah.
And now, through some of his youth team Nashville stuff, and now with RSL, he's starting to show it on the field in terms of actual production, but... Yeah, he's kind of a fun USL guy, kind of, you know, comes good. I don't know. I'll be curious if he makes the Olympic squad.
Yeah, Olympics, I mean, Olympic squad, what we're 2 years out from, like, World Cup and stuff. Like, I imagine that I think he might.
Yeah. We're not here for that, though. We're here to talk the best league in the whole damn world.
Best league in the whole world.
Absolutely. So we started to review your 2023 already with the heartbreak in the final. How would you... They're doing the State of the Union tonight. Right now. How would... If you had what was the state of USL betting in 2023, Mr. President?
So... thank you. You know, I think... Hold on, let me pull up my... So if I went just off of my quote-unquote official plays, and official plays meaning plays that, like, I have a couple partnerships and plays that I, you know, I will share with people that, you know, when they want to get action down. USL totals were really good last year. I did really good on USL totals. It might actually, USL totals, so I'm tracking MLS totals, USL totals, and NWSL totals, and then, of course, spreads and money lines in the same leagues, right? So three different, or a total of nine different segments of sort of tracking, and USL totals were by far the best. And that totals, you know, my buddy Nate would tell you that totals are definitely where in most leagues are more my strong suit. I think that, dude, I remember, it must have been the open of last season. I opened it up and they had Louisville, Atlanta. It was the last season? It must have been the season before.
Yeah,
so it must have been the season before. Louisville and Atlanta, they opened at a total of 4. I was like, all right, well, give me every max bet I can get on the under.
Yeah.
It's like, it was just some not. And, the, you know, lines have definitely tightened up since. But I think that a lot of these teams' lines are based off reputation and not based off of, you know, metrics or performance or anything. So I think that... you know, USL was the best of my three leagues last year, which is not surprising. Then MLS, then NWSL. NWSL was a rough year last year. I think the World Cup threw a lot of stuff off. But USL, as much as it's tightening, man, I mean, long, you know, we're not going to see the days where we can get, you know, a team at 10 to, as a 10 to 1 underdog against another team, right? Those days are gone, mm-hmm. You know. What was it? It was Monterey Bay's inaugural season, which I guess was 2 seasons ago.
Yes.
So not last season, but the season before.
Mm-hmm.
I remember they were like a 14 to 1 dog going into Louisville, maybe a little bit more than that. That was like the only time in the past couple of years where we saw like a really drastic, and they won. Remember that? They won outright.
Yes.
They went in, they went 1-0. Yeah. But like, we don't really see those anymore. Whereas like in 2019, 2020, like we did see that, right? Going back 3, 4, 5 years, we did see longer underdogs, you know, bigger disparity in lines, and that's one of the things that made the market so soft. But even though the lines aren't as soft as that, they're still beatable because, like I said, a lot of these, a lot of lines are based. They seem to be built a little bit more on reputation and results, and not so much performance and metrics, which is, you know, what gives sports bettors a lot of, you know, an edge when they get into it. You know, looking at the you know, the futures market, you know, it's a who's who right at the top of the market, like your standard Louisville, Tampa Bay, you know, San Antonio, Charleston unfortunately is not bettable this year. Sacramento leads the pack. Pittsburgh, the market still thinks Pittsburgh is going to be a top contender, but I'm not going to say they're not going to be because that's what I did last year and I got egg on my face. But it's so the state of betting the USL is still a viable market to bet in, and I don't even think you don't need to be any sort of quant. You don't need to dig into deep analytics. You kind of just need to be paying attention, right? Like, there's still opportunities for late scratches that the market doesn't, you know, like, oh, like half the reserve team's playing this, you know, this game.
Still got a couple of those last year.
Yeah, like those are things that make the market beatable without really even digging deep into metrics and stuff, you kind of just have to know, like, who matters and who doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, when Kyle, help me out here, played for Miami, played for Memphis before, Stryker.
Murphy?
Yeah, Kyle Murphy. He's not in the lineup, and either the market doesn't move because no one's really paying attention, so you can bet against them, or people are paying attention and it moves, and I'm like, I don't know if Kyle Murphy is really worth that much. Number, right?
Yeah,
and it's inconsistent, right? And that's one of the things about USL. Like, I think you just kind of pay attention to how the market reacts to news, how the market's not reacting to news, which, like we noted, is even more so the case, and just knowing, when Ben Pearman went to, going back to the top, the first conversation, when Ben Pearman went to Charleston, I was like, I'm looking to bet Charleston. Like, when I opened the futures markets last year, I was looking for Charleston, and I was surprised to find them at 100-1.
It was all based on them being absolutely dog shit the year before, and
that's
then
exactly right.
Not respecting Pearman moving over from Memphis.
So, you know, right now, the way that it's the futures markets has moved, you know, understandably, Miami is 75-1. Loudoun and Oakland are the very bottom. It's kind of surprised me. Monterey Bay is the only team that has longer odds now than when they opened a week and a half ago. A bigger move, I should say. I want to say they were like 40-1, 50-1 when this thing opened, and now they're 75-1, which is surprising because I know Sam Gleadle left, but they picked up, they got Traeger, is that right? Tristan Traeger, I think, went over that way. He's a solid striker. This is a team that like competes. They definitely try. I think they're decently coached, but there is understandably something missing still from that Monterey Bay team. Like, they showed,
that's a team that overperformed early in the year and then.
Yeah.
Fell back to probably closer to what they were, but it looked like they fell off because they started super hot.
Now the two big movements that we saw going the other direction, going from longer odds, shorter odds, are and I don't want to pat myself on the back here, are the two teams that I ended up betting. North Carolina and Rhode Island were both open 60-1, and I bet both of them. And now they're 20-1 and 25-1 respectively.
Because those were both wild cards in terms of who they're, well, with North Carolina, who they were keeping up from League One, and then they added some nice pieces, and then Rhode Island just went splash the cash.
So this, I think, is a big. So I sent this to my partners. I was like, "Hey, Rhode Island, North Carolina, 60-1." It was a few days ago, and at noon Eastern, that's what the numbers were. I'd already bet them, and I'd bet them the day before, so they didn't move off my action. By the time they got to it later in the day, it had moved. And I think this is a big signal in USL, talking about what is the state of the USL. More people are paying attention. More people are, people are aware of the potential that these teams have, right? Because Rhode Island and North Carolina, to most fans, should be very much unknown. Right, and here you have Rhode Island. Here, you really have to be—you have to be kind of a USL hardo, or have done your research to know that these teams, have a shot. You know what I think, though, and I can't prove it, but I think USL Tactics or Boy John Morrissey, I think he has something to do with this, because I have not seen anybody speak as highly about these teams with reason as he has. I wonder how many bettors are paying attention to his analytics.
I'm just hoping he's getting his money in first before he hits publish.
Man, I really hope that guy's betting, because I see his. I don't know if he is. I don't want to ask. I don't want to offend him if he's not. But he's so at the beginning. Well, before he did Backheeled, and I subscribed to Backheeled. I think all their stuff's good for all three leagues. The stuff is good. But before he went to Backheeled, at the beginning, middle, and end of the year season, I would I asked him, like, hey, what charity can I donate to? And your stuff is so good, like, I'm profiting off of it. And so periodically, I will send him a note to be like, hey, I've sent another another amount of dollars over to your charity to keep up the good work. But now I still do that occasionally, but I'm now subscribed to Backfield, so I know that I'm still paying my dues
for your
contributing. There is a word for it. I'm contributing. I can't recommend Backfield enough. The stuff on MLS, NWSL, and USL are all great.
Are you finding any books consistently softer than others, or because if there's a hole in my game, I shop, but I don't shop probably nearly enough around.
You're in Pennsylvania, man. Pennsylvania didn't do legalization quite as well as other states did.
Correct.
I don't know. Yeah, so the amount of books that are probably worth betting are smaller than a Virginia or New Jersey or Colorado. I think that, this is odd. Like, FanDuel doesn't book USL in Virginia. And I don't know why, because like other books do, so it can't be a regulation thing. But if I go to Maryland, the FanDuel app there,
they'll
does.
Take it. Yes, I was gonna say. Yeah, I've played it out here, sir. Okay.
Yeah, I don't, and I might actually message them and be like, hey, why isn't the USL market available on the Virginia side? I think FanDuel, you're probably more likely to find a few more, like 10, 20 more cents better on the money line. So a good example, if you think Las Vegas can be punchy this week against Memphis, which I definitely think they can, you can, they're kind of plus, they're anywhere between like plus 450 and plus 525, depending on the market is.
Yeah, I saw 500 earlier today.
Yeah, so you're probably going to, and FanDuel's probably going to have the higher side of that market than most are. Caesars, I have found, are a little slower to move on the half goal handicap. So if you're looking for a plus half or lay half, you might find, if you notice that other books are starting to move or don't have great odds, always go to Caesars to see if they've moved yet. They seem to be a little slower on that particular market. And I might have mentioned this last year, but the two greatest hacks when it comes to shopping lines that I can give anybody, if you're looking to play a pick'em, right? And a good example for this week would be like Colorado and Miami, right? That's what they're playing, Miami. A pick'em, meaning you're picking one side to win. If it's a draw, it's a push. Is the same exact bet as draw no bet, right?
Yes.
And those are two different markets, but not every book has them like synced up, right? Like, and so, you might find the price on a pick'em to not be not be great, or maybe it's not offered, but you can go find draw no bets somewhere in the book as well. And then on the other side, catching half of a goal, so plus 0.5 goals, is the same as the double chance, right? The double chance is because catching half a goal wins if on a draw, or if your team wins, then that's the same thing that a double chance is. So when shopping lines, those are ways that to check more markets for better prices. But we'll see. I can tell you that if you're someone who primarily bets soccer, or you're only looking to, like, if you're just just getting into these markets, books like DraftKings and BetMGM will notice the small market betting, and they'll respond. They may not like long-term betting into just small markets. If you are betting bigger markets, NFL, NBA, NHL, betting the small soccer markets, that shouldn't be a bother.
What kind of leaned into that? How has been the ability to get the money in? Still,
got to get creative. Yeah. Sometimes, sometimes it means spreading around. But I mean, like, FanDuel takes a full bet, Caesars takes a full bet. I still use one offshore shop. They'll take they take it. But what sucks is, like, occasionally a line is. like, let's say I want both teams to score, and DraftKings has the best price, and I can't get more than $24 down. And then BetMGM has the next best price, and I can't get more than $20 down. Like, it's time, you know, and then it's like, okay, well, now I'm taking the third best price, which is already frustrating, and, you know, I've gotten to the point now that I don't even bother going to DraftKings or BetMGM for stuff like that. Like, I use those for bigger sports. Yeah.
Now, FanDuel, they limit you across the board or just on certain markets?
It's usually across the board. I mean, you can get more down on bigger markets, but like anything in the USL, even in the MLS, is considered too small for them. Like I tried making a top goal scorer bet in DraftKings for MLS, and like I got limited like $2.30 or something like that. So. And they just don't want the action. That's what they're telling me. They're, you know, it's not saying, "Oh, our only risk is this." Like they're essentially saying, "Stop, don't bet this." Yeah. Right? Like we don't want this action.
You ever bet just on principle?
Yeah, well, sometimes. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm still gonna get my. It's 70-1 here and 40-1 everywhere else. So I'm still getting my $2
in. I'm gonna get the best of it for $2.40, of course. Yeah. Of course.
But what's nice, though, is, what's been kind of convenient of recent is, like, I can't get down on DraftKings, but I have a handful of, like, friends and coworkers that, like, they just have Square, you know, rec accounts. And I'll just be like, hey, can you get $100 down on this bet for me? And, like, there's, like, no timer. They don't wait anything. They just hit bet and it goes, right? Like,
which it's amazing is, how that works. But,
yeah. Which is not
their internet is so much better than yours.
Yeah, but what's great is they don't care, right? Because, you know, like, you know, even if they get limited, like, they probably, like, it probably wouldn't mean anything to them. So, you know, so I still have my ways of getting, taking advantage of those lines. But, yeah, I don't, I personally don't bet them as often as I used to.
So, as we've established, both tonight and kind of in our recurring series on this,
yeah,
there's some softness in the market on USL in other small markets, not just second division American soccer. But what do you find are the more relevant data points to take advantage of less well-educated lines coming from the books?
Yeah, so I mean the first thing is just to you know, from a more macro level, you know, just understanding the difference between performance and reputation, and kind of what I mean by that is, for a lot of middling teams that maybe like Phoenix last year was a really great example of this, right? Like they struggled early, like, you know, at a couple points when they were going through like managerial change or whatever, and like but their reputation of just being a USL star, you know, star child, still kind of preceded them into a couple of the lines, and in realizing that you know, the line is a little bit different here because it's the name and not the performance can be a first tipping point. I use two websites for most of my USL stats. The first one I use is footystats.org, and the other one is americansocceranalysis.com. Based off of those two, I can usually get everything I need to make a bet. I mean, you do this enough, like I can open up a book and fire off a couple of bets, and I'm confident because, like, if anybody like listens to, you know, if you follow like football and stuff like that, like my buddy Gil Alexander does a show called Guessing Lines on Monday mornings, and he quote unquote guesses the lines because he doesn't look at them, and then a bookmaker tells him like what the actual lines are.
Yeah,
and you know, it's when I first heard that, I was like, oh man, what a skill, right? Like, what a skill to be able to just kind of know what the line should be. Yeah, you kind of get there. You pay attention to it enough. You find out that, you know, this team's playing that team, and it's like, oh, okay, like, I think, and it's a really great exercise, too. Like, oh, I think, you know, I think, you know, Charleston should probably be, you know, it'll probably be a pick 'em going into Pittsburgh with some juice, right? Like a -125 juice going into Pittsburgh. I'd probably set the line at like 2.5, right? That's actually a pretty good line. Don't look at me like that. Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm not looking at you like that.
I feel like you're looking at me a certain way. I'm not trying to throw Pittsburgh any shade here. I'm just saying. I think the line.
I was trying to attach a price to it. You're going straight 2.5. I'm trying to attach the price to it. That's all.
Oh, I mean, probably fair. Like -110 on both sides. I think up to 2.5. I think that'd be probably fair. But like you start, you know, you get to the point where okay, it's Thursday or whatever it is, and like lines are trying to open up for the weekend games. It's like okay, that's where I thought it is. That's what that is. Boom, that's way off. Bet it, right? Like I already know that's off. And then like after like the sort of the period of like firing off on lines that I just know are off. Now I'm looking at okay, who's in and out, right? Who do I know is out based on red cards? Who may I presume is out based off of injuries or you know any knocks that they've recently had? I go into American Soccer Analysis. I look at goals added, and I see like you know how important has this player been in the lineup, you know, for this team? Hector Herrera. I mean, this is a MLS example, but like Hector Herrera, like last year. I mean, every game that he wasn't in, like the Houston just like completely underperformed, and he was top five in goals added. And that's not a coincidence, right? Like it's. There are players that, like, when they're on the pitch, they are a key part of. Philip Goodrum's a real example of a great. Oh, Malloy, there we go. Aaron Malloy's a better example of this, right? Like, you know, where their existence on the pitch is either contributing to opportunity for goals or helping decrease the opportunity for goals on the defensive side, and being able to track the players that are in and out can be a good tipping point. And then you know, people make fun of XG and you know how it's kind of you know, people make jokes about analytics. I still think XG and XGA matter. You know, I think that
yes, they matter.
You know,
yes,
yeah. I mean, look, there are people who's trying to get too cool for school anyways, I don't. But I also look at touches in the box when I can get that. Dangerous attacks is something I definitely look at. Dangerous attacks is like kind of a predecessor to XG in the same way that like fly ball rate is a great predictor of home run rate, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're hitting a lot of fly balls, you're more likely to be hitting a home run than someone who's not. Same thing with dangerous attacks. If you're getting more dangerous attacks, you're probably more likely to create XG. Than someone who's not. So those are the data points I look to. Dangerous attacks, especially if I make in-game stuff, right? So like if it's halftime and I look at the in footy stats and I go to the you know the match and see, Fot Mob is another one. Fot Mob is an app, FOTMOB.
I'm sure
that'll show.
I imagine anyone who's listening to this probably has Fot Mob. Loaded. That's kind of the go-to, at least in our circle. That is the go-to.
Yep. So Fot Mob is actually really good for like in-game XG, but I like to look at dangerous attacks as well to know like is that XG coming from like one really good shot or was that built over time? Like mm-hmm. I want to know like how, was there just like one penalty made and that's why they have 7.5 XG in one goal, right? 0.75 actually, and then so mid game, right, I'll go and I'll look to see like who is there an imbalance in dangerous attacks and possession and is there an opportunity at halftime, but those are like I said USL is still soft enough to where like you don't have to go much deeper than that. You'd be like, even the player level stuff, like just knowing who's in and out and who's the key contributor, even if you don't know their underlying stats is good enough.
When it comes to in-game, just because you brought up, I'm asking the question so we can put the data or not put the information out there. You're not touching in-game at any time except halftime, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I like to wait till halftime because we also, you know, there's also first half and second half data, you know, pregame data that you can look at. Jumping leagues again, but I think it was last season, Plymouth Argyle over in England were just phenomenal at home in the second half. I mean, I don't know what it was about that team, but if they came out of the tunnel at halftime either tied or down, like they were an auto bet every time. And so looking at how to, you know, looking at sort of the snapshot of games and how they performed in first and second half, you can kind of like, oh, this is a team that turns it on the second half. This is a team that when they get in the lead and when they have a two goal or more lead in the first half, they come out and just they park the bus, right? Like there's ways of sort of evaluating that as well. And it's good to know, right? It's really easy as a sports fan, as a flawed human brain, to see three or four goals scored in the first half and think, oh man, this game's gonna get out of control. No, because they go into the tunnel. Everybody it's kind of a reset on the game. It's a reset on the energy. And then there's a lot of those games that see one or nil goals in the second half because it's a different pace, different game plan. Some coaches are better at making changes.
The personnel halftime adjustments.
The halftime adjustments. Yeah, I mean, I think we overthink halftime adjustments as viewers and as bettors, but I do think that you can see there's quantifiable. We can see like what's his name, Andy Reid, right, for the Chiefs. He actually makes like halftime adjustments. Like you see a difference in pace, I should say. Like you see a little difference in like pace, cadence, and stuff like that. It's not like, oh, we're gonna completely drop them. Maybe I don't want to keep on. I don't know.
Not to go down that. Yeah, but he's good with player usage. Seems to change a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to make this an NFL thing, but yes.
Right, but I think it's. I mean, like to make the analogy, right? That's a good example. Bob Lilly. I mean, there we go. Bob Lilly's.
He'll make adjustments every 10 minutes.
Yes, the Riverhounds are definitely a team that I look to bet in the second half in all their games. I don't always bet them, but like I always look if there's an opportunity because I know Bob Lilly is probably making better halftime adjustments or in-game adjustments in the 60th and 70th minutes than his opponent is.
So it's been a couple of days, and we have week one lines out. Had a chance to look at them. What? If you were to glean any league-wide analysis on how betting is going to go this year based on just lines that came out 3 days before these week one games, much the same as previous years, lots of opportunity, they're getting a little smarter. What would be your analysis, just generally speaking, of the lines that came out for week one?
Just based off, if I was to make a bold prediction, just based off of week one lines, the competitive underdog is still going to be available week to week. I mean, that's and that was my bread and butter early on in my USL betting. Going back to the line that I referenced, the game line I mentioned earlier. I like the Las Vegas Life to be competitive against Memphis. I don't think they don't have to be a well-oiled machine to keep that game close, right? I don't know if Memphis has enough to really run, to really blow the doors off of Vegas. And so I think even a team that was just recently kind of put together, that team looks good enough on paper to just go out and play soccer well enough to keep it close, right? And so, and that's, you could get Las Vegas at 5-1, which is hey, we got Orange County at 5-1 going into Tampa in the final a couple of years ago, yep. Right? So like things have not really changed on that front, that there is this belief in lower tier soccer that when one team is objectively better than the other, that the implied probability of that team winning is still too far. I don't even know if I could say, I'm not going to go as far as say that Memphis is definitely not the better team, but they're not that much better of a team on paper, right? There's still a lot to beat. We don't know. The big question mark here is Las Vegas going to play, as a team? But
they've come together so late. but they got some what could be some decent pieces. I always think about with Memphis, that field is terrible for the first month.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It is consistently terrible.
I should go back and look at USL tactics, sort of in out, who's coming in and who's out. Like, they've had enough turnover though that I don't know if there's enough experience on the team for them to even be used to that field being awful. You know what I mean? Like, I think both teams might be.
I just mean in terms of just solid offensive opportunities. I think it's a neutralizer. I'm thinking more of the total was my first thought on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. What is it? 2.75. Yeah. So you think it would? So you're looking at the under here.
It was one that crossed my mind. I'll say that much.
Yeah. A lot of these. I mean, almost all but one. So Sacramento, Orange County is 2.5. The rest of these lines are at 2.75, which means, for people unfamiliar, it means that half of your bet is on 3 and half your bet's on 2.5, over or the other. Yeah, and I mean it's kind of a cop out, right? Like the books aren't like committing to one side or the other, and it makes it a little more difficult to find a spot, but. Let me tell you, the line that I'm looking at that I'm definitely going to have some sort of action on, it won't be nearly as much as the amount of money I have on Colorado or Las Vegas, but San Antonio lost some players, and I don't know if San Antonio is the juggernaut of yesteryear, and Loudon continues to improve. I'm not saying that Loudon's going to go in on day one and upset San Antonio, but you can find a decent price for a plus 1.5 goals. You can find them at 7-1 in some places. It's worth a flyer, in my opinion. Zach Ryan's a great player, and Ryan Martin's a really good coach.
I'm so stunned they brought in a technical director above Ryan Martin now.
Yeah.
I don't know. That just seemed like a crazy, are you pushing him out the door type of move? Because that, he was, I felt bad for the guy because he always had to do what DC wanted in terms of personnel. He finally gets to run the show, and then now we're putting this kid over top of you. That was weird.
If this match was played in Loudon and the odds were even adjusted, like if you were getting like Loudon at plus 0.75 and their money line was like 4.5 to 1.5 to 1, I'd absolutely be firing out Loudon right now. The fact that Loudon has to go into a tough place to play against a perennial tough team is the only reason I'm half pause, but I imagine I'll have some sort of action on Loudon before kickoff on Saturday. But right now the only two positions that I have booked, and they're pretty significant positions, are Colorado Springs. I got at a pick'em. I just think they're objectively better than Miami, and I just don't think they lose this match. I got that at plus 115. You can still find some plus money here and there. And then Las Vegas plus the goal. I got a minus 105. It's like minus 110 or further at most places, but
with them getting the goal.
With them getting a goal, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I might even, I'm probably going to have a Colorado Springs, you can get money line at plus 180 at some places. They'll probably have a little bit of that too. I'm a Ronaldo Damus believer. I really am. And it's probably because he cashed a big ticket for me when Orange County upset.
Is that Cal's recency bias or just?
I mean, he didn't suck with San Diego. He went in there and scored goals, and look, his goals added wasn't nearly what it was when it was in Orange County. But you're telling me that young man can't be the next Haji Berry in Colorado?
No, it definitely could be.
Yeah. And who does Miami have? You know what I mean? Like, what has Miami done this offseason to make you think they can compete? I mean, honestly,
I would see Miami be
a favorite with anybody.
Miami kept, they would announce a name, the name would go up there, and I kept thinking, okay, who's the guy that they're like poaching from some Italian third or fourth division that's just going to come in here and knock the socks off? And no, they're going through the motions. Ricardo Silva is just not trying it this year. I don't know.
Here's the thing. Like, I know that no one's really paying attention to anything other than Inter Miami in that city. But you got a city that's like more pumped for soccer than they've probably ever been. Like, take advantage of it. Get your team worth talking about too at a certain level, right? Like I don't know what kind of relationship they have with Inter Miami, right?
It's not good.
Oh really? Oh, it's not good.
No.
Oh okay. Well, never mind.
Yeah. No. He not to go too in the weeds on that. I mean, he pretty much has that. Ricardo Silva owns that team basically as a constant F you to Major League Soccer.
Okay.
Because he's been part of that for a while. He was with that lawsuit, the NASL lawsuit, and he was dealing with a lot of that stuff. Yeah. No, this is for all the American owners and people who have these teams to actually make money. I sincerely think he owns that team just to be a pain in the ass.
Well,
and he has the money to do it. So good on him. That's why I don't get upset when people dog on, why they play in that college football field and why is he still around and not like, nah, he's doing his own thing. It has nothing to do with actually making money.
So funny thing that happened, and if anybody who has kids can understand that, like, life comes at you fast and it's easy to miss things. As I'm doing, like, January hits. And I'm like, okay, time to really start. Let me start. I'm following John Morrissey's transfer tracker. I'm following, like, as articles are coming out, I'm starting to read them. And then I was like doing the math in my head. I'm like, wait, we added, North Carolina and we added Rhode Island. But the math is, I was like, where did we lose a team? Dude,
forget?
I had to look up RGV. I was like, where the fuck are their Toros?
Yeah.
Oh, they don't play anymore. I was like, what? Like, dude, that announcement completely missed me. Was that a surprise?
Kind of.
Did we see that coming?
People saw it coming about a month out.
Okay. But like middle of last season, we weren't thinking like, oh, like this team's on the road.
Right before the season ended, you started hearing the first whispers of it. And okay. Then the stadium was owned by the town, the city, township, whatever municipality, we'll say, and they sold it to the college there because they were going to start an American football program, and that was going to become the college's football stadium. Mm-hmm. And that kind of was the writing on the wall that they're probably done. And there was a whole...
That's too bad.
Yeah.
RGV was always great for an under. They were always great as competitive dogs. I really liked betting them.
I'll miss that stadium where the railing looked like the touchline. And you always thought, wait, that ball's out. Oh, no. Yeah. The line below the line is actually the touchline.
Yeah. But, that,
and they had the cheerleaders back in the early days, which was a mind blow. Like, oh, they have the Toro girls, and it was a bit Vegas-y before Vegas.
So I know on the I have not listened to the Houndsy preview.
You don't need to. It's too. Everyone needs to listen. I shouldn't say it as I'm on this podcast.
Everybody needs to listen.
Everybody needs to listen. It gets good around the 75 minute mark.
Well, what? I mean, I don't want to belabor this podcast, or I want to like draw this on, but like, I actually enjoy listening to the preview because I like hearing your guys' sort of the questions that you have and what everybody's position. What were some of your questions this year? Like, what are some of the predictions you guys are making?
I mean, we kept a lot of the stuff from last year, so we're you know, where the goal is coming from, who on the back line is going to produce offensively. The problem is all the forwards outside of Kizza left. You've brought a bunch of new guys in, most notably Keziah Sterling.
Dude, I already have my Rhode Island kit coming in the mail. I cannot wait to root on Robert Dikwa. I cannot wait to root on Dikwa, man. When I saw that move, I was like, I'm betting Rhode Island in the, like, I knew that Rhode Island was going to be undervalued in the market, and I was surprised about North Carolina and them were too. So, I'm bought in on Rhode Island.
I mean, as you should.
Wicked
be.
Good soccer.
So, yeah, problem is the predictions are kind of all over the board. One, it's so many new strikers showing up. So outside of Kizza, it's so many new guys, and they showed up. They've come in the camp late. Sterling got in a week and a half ago, so we watched him play 25 minutes against Pitt, is all I've seen of him in person. But in those 25 minutes, he may have been the best person on the field, easily. And wearing flashy pink boots, so it's eyes just draw to him. But he made a bunch of college kids look really, really silly, real fast. The midfield's going to be solid. It's going to be nice. They've retained enough people and adding some nice pieces. That Jackson Walty guy, a former Pitt guy coming in, I think it's going to be nice with him. The back line, again, it's a bunch of big bodies, but Hogan, who was kind of your third choice center back last year, is now the veteran leader on the back line. So who knows where that goes. And then this keeper they've brought in, Eric Dick, out of the Minnesota. Big guy. Big, lanky guy. And if Bob can just get a big old athlete back there to scoop up crosses and stuff that he does, then that should go well. But
So I'm genuinely curious, and I need to know from someone who pays more attention to this club than I pay attention to any of the clubs. Pitt's going into last season, and I believe I also had this position of that, like, Pittsburgh was finally going to fall from grace, right? Mm-hmm. The perennial competitive Bob Lilly team just wasn't going to be able to put this one together, and then they finished top of the East. I know everybody is hesitating to say the same thing, even though we're all thinking it.
Mm-hmm.
We're all hesitating to say it because Bob Lilly makes us look like fools.
Yes, how many times can you be wrong before you just stop trying to say something?
Yeah. And so I'm curious, as a fan, as a supporter, as an academic of the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, does this year feel any, like, does it just feel like last year, like, okay, there's this new parts that Bob Lilly's gonna put together, or does it feel different than last year?
It feels different from last year. As you've noted, and it was pretty much universal, everyone thought, okay, last year was the year where the rug pull comes, and it goes dramatically falls back. And because no one saw Dikwa, who had been with the team 3 years prior and didn't do anything of note prior to that, just explodes for 20 goals in the league, plus a notable goal in the Open Cup. Ordonez, as a second-year guy, just bosses the back line. And then for the stretch of games where Dikwa was out, he decides to score three goals as a defender in that stretch, becomes your second-leading goal scorer. All these things came together that you didn't see coming together to make last year work. This year, you lost a lot of pieces, but the midfield has stayed intact, which a lot of people would have to say is how many goals were scored last year because the midfield intercepted a pass, it became a quick 1-2 pass to the forward, and he's in on the goal. There were so many times where that happened. If those midfielders are doing that again, where the counter or the change of possession somewhere in the middle of the field turns into a goal 5 seconds later, then that is still repeatable going into this year. the question marks are on the back line. It's a lot of big guys, but again, how quickly can they come together and work? This Pierre Kiet guy, he was in the New England system. He just got into camp a week ago. So how quickly he gets up to speed and contributes is a question. On the front line, everyone is raving about Keziah Sterling. I talked to Bob a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and he made it sound like they're going to get him in. He would then have to leave the country, get his paperwork sorted out, and he might miss the first couple games. He might be available on Saturday in Albuquerque, so if he's available from week one, that's kind of a big deal. Some of the pieces that have come in, like Kiet, like Sterling, are known prospects outside of the championship. One guy from League One, one guy from Next Pro. So there's known pieces there. The midfield is still very much in place. All those pieces are there. The back line is getting shuffled around a bit more. You're looking Danny Rivera on the back. Asamano is probably your left back. Hogan. Preseason against Pitt, he had Danny Griffin playing as a center back. Crazy stuff. So that's kind of where the question mark is. I sincerely think that I would never, of course, say no. They're a player shield and all that kind of stuff. Like, not going there. The John Morrissey having him like eighth or ninth, something along those lines. Again, there's a lot of wild cards with Rhode Island and North Carolina. They're a fourth, fifth, sixth place team.
Because if we've added two to the East, who made the moves from was it Tulsa?
Tulsa moved west, and then Memphis has gone west.
Memphis has gone west.
They were the westernmost Eastern team after all the shuffling happened.
That's right.
Which is weird, but yes.
So you've Memphis, who somehow finished fourth last year in the East. I don't understand that, but they did.
What, Steven, right. Glass, first name. What, Steven Glass, the head coach? He got some pieces of work there. He developed guys as the year went on.
They finished ahead of Louisville. Anyways, you have Tulsa, who looked like they finally were gonna put it together for a playoff run, and then just couldn't do it.
And they're gonna take a step back further this year.
Yeah. Poor Philip Goodrum, man. He deserves better. But Memphis and Tulsa, Memphis being a playoff team, Tulsa not. They're out. They're in the West. The West loses San Diego and the Toros. San Diego, obviously, they've been a good team. So the East adds North Carolina, Rhode Island, and to your point, like they're kind of wild cards, but the consensus is one of these teams is going to be in the playoffs, if not both. And I don't think that's too far-fetched, because as much as I love Loudoun, I think they're probably bubble to miss. Miami's likely to miss. Hartford, I don't know if they're going to be able to put it together, but they're probably like a bubble team. And then like Detroit and Birmingham, I don't know if they've done enough to like make a meaningful step forward. Same thing kind of with Indy. I think it's a who's who in the East, with Tampa Bay and Louisville leading the way, Charleston up there as well. I think Tampa's probably the best team in the East when it's all said and done.
See, I think Tampa's slid back a little bit.
So, like, I want to agree with you in, like, losing. Like, when I saw they lost LaCava and Sparrow and Ekra and who's that striker? J.J. Williams. I was like, oh, my God, they're falling from grace hard. And then they come back and they're like, yeah, but we're going to get Nick Moon and we're going to get Jordan Farr, and we still have, Cal Jennings. Lasso's still with us. Like, I think
Neil Collins not being there is a variable.
So that's exactly right. So if you know, if the new gaffer can keep the things going, I think Tampa Bay and Louisville are definitely the teams to beat. If not, I mean, I think that Ben Pearman's going to be like, well, I'm going to take that second spot. Thank you very much. The big question is are the Riverhounds going to, like, even if this is just an average team, it's a playoff team. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I think is kind of getting lost in this conversation of, like, what are the Pittsburgh, the Riverhounds going to do this year? I don't think they actually need to be a great team to be a fourth or fifth place team in the East, right? I think they just need to be a competitive Lily team. And that gives Bob Willie all season to figure out what works and what doesn't for going into the playoffs, which, you know, unless you're going into Louisville week one, any game's a winnable one. Not to say that, like, you know, anybody loses in Louisville, but
it's going into Louisville week three.
Yes.
Hounds win in Louisville if it's not the playoffs.
Yeah,
their record in Kentucky is pretty damn good.
So I'm actually a little surprised that it's not closer to a pick'em, Pittsburgh going into New Mexico. I don't know what New Mexico's done to really improve themselves, but, like, they were really flat all year.
And they haven't improved? As best
all
I can
year.
Tell.
All season. They were just flat. Give me Bob Lilly to figure it out against New Mexico. You can get a quarter goal on the spread. So there you go, Hounds fans. I endorse a bet on the Riverhounds this week.
There it is,
for sure. Yeah,
took a while to get there, but we got there. Out.
But yeah, and I don't think the Riverhounds is this match.
No,
give me a draw. Give me the half win on my bet, and I will be a happy day. Happy
ever. Yeah, I do think the power shift, if there is such a thing, has moved back from the West back towards the East in terms of where the higher end teams are going to be.
Yeah. So Sacramento clearly good. That's it, right? There's no other team that's clearly good. I San Antonio may prove me wrong on that. And
I think Phoenix is still there.
Oh yeah, Phoenix is probably still clearly good.
But I think after those two, it drops off a bit.
I'm trying to blank out Phoenix.
A very forgettable league championship.
Yeah. So Sacramento definitely good. Phoenix probably worthy of the definitely good. Beyond that, all these teams still kind of have to prove it to you, right? Oakland, I think, is missing the playoffs. Las Vegas will be interesting to watch. I don't know if Monterey Bay is going to be able to put it together. They've had the pieces, man. I mean, that's the thing is, like, I'm trying to get excited for them. You know, Traeger joining that lineup matters. I think Sam Gleeler leaving was an underrated departure. Like, when I was surprised when I saw that move, and I think it means more to that team than the community reacting to it. Makes it seem like it did. But, like, Monterey Bay has had who was that? Who did they have last year? Alex Dixon,
former Hound, like, Alex Dixon.
They couldn't get him going.
Well, no, he got, like, started and then just fell off a cliff.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Where was he for most of the season? Like, they, you know, he walked in. He's like, look, I can score goals. Like, great, but we're gonna struggle to get you the ball in good spots with it. I don't. You know, does now Dixon? Is Dixon? Did they retain him? I think he did.
Pretty sure he's still there.
Let's see what USL Tax. Yeah, he's still there. So they now have Alex Dixon and Tristan Traeger, and I can't think of the guy's name.
Velesky? Is he still there? Or did he move?
Velesky left. Okay. I don't know where he went, though. These are, you know, they lost Sean Okoli, too. He was good on the ball. Anyways, I don't know if they're... I don't know... But you're right. Like, the West's two teams that we'll say is definitely good. Everybody has to prove themselves. You know, I can say pretty confidently that at least Tampa, Louisville, and Charleston are definitely good. You know, I know it's only one more team, but I think the chasm between the definitely goods and the prove yourself to be good, I think, is shorter in the East than it is in the West.
Yes. Top end could be similar. When you get to 5, 6, 7, 8, you're going to see a difference between the East and the West, for sure.
I'm going to name you three teams in the East. You tell me which is more surprising to found out they got the four seed in the East. Miami, Loudoun, or Hartford?
Miami.
Yeah.
Hartford, I think, is still a year away.
Yeah.
They're putting the right front office together to make it work, but it might be a year to get old contracts off the book and get that all squared around. Miami is just... they might be competing for a wooden spoon this year. And Loudoun, while probably not great, still above what Miami's doing or not doing.
Do you think Bautista is going to bring a culture change to Las Vegas that gets the shtick out of the Las Vegas matches? Or do you think that's so ingrained into the culture of Las Vegas Lights soccer that removing it would harm the franchise?
You want the hot take?
Yeah. Well, of course I want the hot take.
He's moving them out of there.
Okay.
MLS wants that market bad.
Yeah.
And I don't see why you stick around there. Why do all the work to try to, one, build a fan base at all that Don Garber just wants to kind of usurp for himself or for the league? I think he learns the footballing business a little bit and finds a better market to try to really accelerate with. So, I mean, that's the hot take. I could be totally wrong. But he's doing things at the Vegas, the one race that was in Vegas. He was out there wearing the kit and doing that stuff. So he's going to be camera front, which is a bit, as things were before. So,
do they have good kits this year?
They're kind of lame, I thought.
What? Man, what a city that should always have rocking kits. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's too bad. Last year they had the kit that had the skyline on it, and that was dope.
Now, if the question is, am I going to see Jose Bautista lean out of a helicopter, fleeing $5,000 on the field? I don't think we're going to see that. Which is the one thing we all want to see.
Well, do you think we're going to see, the mattresses on the sideline where that's, a seating area?
They better have the kiddie pools, because it's Hounds in Vegas on June 29th, and there's a couple of us thinking about getting a kiddie pool. So if you got nothing going on late June, come join us in a kiddie pool at Cashman Field.
I never want to see MLS win over the USL, right? I love the MLS. I'm going to go to plenty of DC United games this year. I'm going to watch so much MLS this year. But, their bullshit with the Open Cup pisses me off. San Diego, losing its USL club for an MSL club pisses me off. Vegas, all that said, though, Vegas deserves an MLS club, right? That market should have an MLS club, but it shouldn't be at the expense of the USL.
But San Diego just proved to us now is, let's be very honest, they started that club with the hopes that they were going to flip it to MLS. And no, we can just, we'll bring our own guys in. You just proved that the market's viable is all you did.
Yeah. I wonder how well an MLS club, especially if a baseball team, is that a done deal? They're still trying to make that a done deal. I
feel like it's not
where
a done
they
deal.
Are on the...
They want to make it sound like it's a done deal, but I don't think it's a done deal.
So, right, summer sports. Let's say they both get there. Are people choosing? How many people are really going to an MLS game, in the summer? Maybe more people that are willing to go to a baseball game in the middle of summer. Maybe soccer is still a very nuanced market. As much as we love it, it's still something that people don't. Most Americans didn't grow up going to soccer matches. They grew up going to baseball matches or baseball games or football games.
It's gonna be a question: how many people will travel to Vegas for a game?
No one. So. No one's traveling to Vegas for a game. People are probably going to catch a game if they're in Vegas.
Correct.
And that just has to work out, right? I mean, are people... Look, if you're in L.A., yeah, you're probably going to go to Las Vegas when Inter Miami comes to town, or L.A. Galaxy comes to town, right? If these crazy ideas that, like, Kevin De Bruyne or, like, that someone like him would come to MLS, like, whenever he comes to town, if that were to happen, like, some people on the West Coast are going to go to Vegas to see that match, right? But, like, people, you know, if you're a Sporting Kansas City fan, you're not planning your Vegas trip around SKC going to, maybe you are. I don't know. Now that I say that, maybe you are doing that, but
it could be one of those.
As a neutral, I'm not traveling for specific games. I would just catch a game if I'm.
I mean, I'm a Vegas fan, and the first year that the Pens played in Vegas, I was there for it because I wasn't not going to see it, but I didn't feel like that had to be an annual trip to go see the Pens play in Vegas. Now, I have a buddy who goes to all the Hounds games. He does go to Vegas every year for the Pens. So there's that segment of people exists.
Where my opinion probably means less in this conversation is, one, I'm more of a neutral than not. Like, I'm more of a neutral. And two, I'm an East Coaster, and the idea of going to Vegas is significant, right? If you're, you know, maybe, you know, if you're on the West Coast and you have a side that you support, yeah, maybe you're going to Vegas for that trip. That would actually be kind of a cool reason to go to Vegas. But here's a question, like, if you're a fan of, you know, if you're an LA-based fan, or you're a, LA is probably the best example here, like, would you rather, well, they need an NBA team first for that. I don't know, maybe MLS would work really well there, and I think, but, like, I don't want them to lose the lights, you know, and that's probably the
I don't see a scenario where they hold on.
No, they can't. Yeah. They can't.
You either get out of town before MLS comes and you try to build up somewhere else, or you stick around and try to fight it out and see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, there's no. I mean, look, other than weirdos like you and me, like, are there people going to Cashman Field when they're in town, or is it just a bunch of locals that are soccer hardos?
It's a fair question. I mean, I went to one game when I was just in town anyways, just to see what to go see Dolly and Dottie. Had to see the llamas, get my picture with them. And yeah. then went for a Hounds game, 2 years ago. And it's on the schedule for this year, so a handful.
But, like, are there any examples right now of a market that has both an MLS and a USL club?
I mean,
I'm looking.
How do you want to define Miami? Charlotte with a League One team.
I'm not counting that. I guess I will. Yeah, I mean, they're US. They had to take a. They
stepped down.
It was really interesting. It was so weird.
Every year, I'm waiting for them to fold up shop, and they keep pulling out.
Dude, they built that new stadium, and it's empty all the time.
And then.
Have I told you my beef with Charlotte Independence?
What was that?
Have I told you my beef with the Charlotte Independence?
No, by all means.
I went down to Charlotte, 2021. My wife was she was working out of doing a lot of work out of town. She comes home, decides she wants to take a small little trip, just a little R&R. I was like, oh, let's go down to Charlotte. It'll be cool to go down there. I had tickets for the match, for the Charlotte Independence match. This is when they were still in the USL.
Mm-hmm.
And the game had to get canceled because I think it was a Red Bulls team, the Baby Bulls, had a COVID outbreak. So they had to cancel the match. And I was like, hey, can I get a refund? And they're like, well, we haven't been authorized to provide a refund. And I was like, I don't live here. I'm not coming back for whatever match this that gets rescheduled. Like, I need a refund. And they were like, we haven't been told we can authorize refunds. I was like, this isn't, like, how does this make sense? I purchased tickets for this match. I cannot attend.
I will not make whatever reschedule you make.
Yeah, like, I'm not, and they're like, well, you know, they came back with, like, well, we can offer you tickets to any match, like, not just this one. Like, you get, and I was like, stop being dumb. Like, I came here, I was supporting the local club, like, it didn't work out, please give me my money back. I had to settle for other tickets, and I didn't make it back. So, Charlotte got my, how much, you know, $90 or whatever they spent on tickets for their, yeah.
Sorry, just add to the long list of complaints about that organization, so.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
All right, this is, we've been going on for a while here.
We have been going for a while. Last part.
Yes.
Let's see here. No, we went through all of it. I guess this is the part where I just remind you, Loudon's coming to Pittsburgh on July 27th. I'm assuming you won't be there, but I have to ask the question anyways.
So, there's one big, what's the word? I don't know the word I'm looking for. There's a time in the summer that is unknown to me, which my wife is visiting her family. Because families are families, they're having a hard time figuring out when that might be, whatever. It's a family reunion type stuff, right? I'm likely not going to that. And so when that happens, I'm doing something, right? Like, that's Timmy time. And so there is a non-zero chance, because it's going to be sometime in the summer, mm-hmm. that it is in late July. If it happens to land that way,
you're not going to Vegas or somewhere else much more interesting.
It depends on how many days I have, right? I don't know how long she'll be gone, right? This and is I have very to make open-ended. Sure that I. It is open ended. It is open ended. But like, right, like the way this works though is like she'll when I find out, I'll be, you know, if it's 3 days, like I'm not leaving until after she leaves, and I gotta make sure I'm back by the time she gets back, right? It's one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So if depending on how much time I have, I may just do something on the East Coast, I may go to Vegas, I don't know. But if I do something on the East Coast and it happens to be that same time, then
the possibility exists.
The possibility absolutely.
I mean, this is a stronger answer than I was expecting, so I'll take it.
Yes, but as you're probably alluding to before, the more likely scenario, October, Pittsburgh comes to Loudon. I'm Loudon likes me now. They visited Arlington Cemetery last year, and I helped support their visit there. So,
you have a nice working relationship with them now.
I do, yeah. Ryan Martin provided a couple of good quotes about the why it's important for him to bring the team to a place like Arlington, stuff like that. So yeah. So I haven't been to a game since that happened. So I should probably make my way up
make
there
that work
with the club. Yeah.
Free parking now. I saw they're not charging for parking this year. That's nice.
God, thank God. My goodness, what a money grab that was. I drove all the way out. I had to pay tolls to get to this match. You're going to charge me to park my car to support your club that sits out here. I'm going to use porter potties. Come on now. I mean, they're trailers there, whatever they are. I get it. But
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying.
All right. So, might see on October, what was it? Yeah, 19th.
Yeah, I mean.
So, everyone listening, we're already going to pressure to get on the bus trip out there. Another reason to shake hands with Tim Lawson.
That's right. Oh, let me. So, Betfred is a sponsor of Loudon.
Are they? They're on the kit, right?
They're on the kit.
Yeah.
They're on the lower back. They don't have futures up. They have lines up. You can bet the USL, but they don't have any futures up. I thought that was outrageous. Come on, like be like fully in this if you're going to.
Come on, Fred.
Come on, Fred. Whoever you are, if you want me to bet with you,
Frederick. Come on, man.
But The real exciting match that I have. I have my tickets to Inter Miami coming to DC in a couple weeks. So,
look at you just feeding the monster that is.
Look, I don't care. I was like, greatest player of my entire generation. Yeah, I'm going. He's coming to my town, and I was like, I found reasonably priced tickets. I was like, I'm going. I'm not messing around with this.
I mean, I respect it. I'm just still very angry at Major League Soccer right now. That's all.
I'm with you. Like I get it, but I'm also not ignoring. I'm not going to let my frustration with MLS. Get
it goes
in the way
to a certain
this.
Point, and that point is still seeing that guy play. And that's
yeah.
And that's how Don Garber got you.
I'm not cheering when he scores. I'm gonna have my DC United kit on. I'm only cheering when the home team. But I'm gonna enjoy every second of watching him score. I'm just not cheering when it happens.
Did you see what's going on in Nashville tonight with Miami playing there?
Are we talking about the supporter section debacle with the
Nashville? Yeah. It's.
But how's that match going?
I do not know.
By the way, I saw we can wrap here. Oh, look at Nashville up 1-0 at the half. Mukhtar's back in the lineup. Good for them. I did see someone. I saw a couple people trying to put out fake news that Suarez and Messi didn't make the trip in an attempt to drive down ticket prices.
Try to. Hey man, if you can manipulate the market, go for it.
Oh man, I thought that because I saw it and I was like, "What? That can't be true." And then I saw what was happening. I was like, "Oh, good on you for trying."
You just have to make it work just long enough to get what you want. That's all.
All right, I know. Inter Miami. There's gonna be so many opportunities to fade them this year. It's gonna be great. You have to take a shot of whatever the strongest liquor you can handle when you do so, because you're never gonna like it. But like, they're about to play 5 matches in 2 weeks, and like that club has old legs. You saw in their match against RSL. RSL couldn't capitalize on it, but like between minute 55 and minute 80, like that team slowed down. Right after all that travel and the preseed and stuff like that, like there were heavy legs in that team.
It's an old squad. They have to be the oldest team in the league, right?
They gotta be.
I mean, I don't know as a fact, but they gotta be.
I mean, they gotta be top three. I mean, that's an old squad, and like they're and I think they're gonna take these the League Cup and CONCACAF. Like, I think they're actually gonna take these tournaments seriously, right? So. And that's going to lead. Now, look, I'm not rushing to bet Montreal this weekend, right? That's not what I'm saying. But the opportunities, if you really pay attention to where the minutes are going for these players, there's going to be opportunities to fade into Miami.
Well, Tim, it's been fun.
I could go.
I did not see this going an hour and 20. I'm not upset about it. I'm amazed that your child has stayed on your lap this entire time. Real trooper.
Yeah, she's been asleep most of the time, but she likes listening to daddy talk.
She got squirmy there. Looked about 10-15 minutes ago. I thought she's ready to throw in the towel, but she's in for round two of sleeping.
Yeah, she's big into sleeping. Yeah,
aren't we all?
Yes,
big fan.
Big fan of sleeping.
All right, man. I appreciate it. I'm glad you said yes.
Dude, I have no one to talk to about this stuff. So like, I'm not going to lie. I was like, is he going to ask me again this year? Is he going to ask me again this year? I was like, come on. I have no one to talk to about this stuff.
Yeah, of course. I was going to send you the DM.
My wife doesn't care. Like, it used to be I could, like, get away with telling her. But now that we have the kids, like, she's like, I don't care. Like, go do your stupid
talk. Just get the hell out of here.
I'm like, yeah, like, I'm going to feed the kids.
Tim, where can the people find you if they don't follow you already? Where are they going? Where can they find you?
I have actually changed. To be a little more clever and for possible future ideas, but the handle on Twitter is at Better By Design, BETTOR, Better By Design. Right now, it says Pooch Mega Fan as my name.
Yeah, and then you DM me. I had no idea what that was for a second until I actually clicked on it.
So Better By Design, Pooch,
yes. Gambling and interior design consulting hybrid confirm.
That's right. Yeah. If you want to build a mini sports book inside of your house, that's what we're gonna do. But no, I'm not gonna get into the name change. But that's the Twitter handle now.
Well, I will spread out there. Tim, as always, thank you very much. Awesome input. Took a path. I mean, I'm also gonna make this double as the Pittsburgh New England preview show, so I don't have to make another recording because I feel like we covered that well enough as well. So thank you for double dipping on that.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it. We'd like to thank the Beautiful Game Network for providing the online hosting of Houndsy. Check out the wealth of soccer content being produced weekly at bgn.fm. The Houndsy theme music was composed and performed by Rocketman and Space Babies. Check them out at facebook.com/spacebabiespgh The show is produced by Joe Madurek. Email the show at pghsteelarmy@gmail.com. Put a podcast in the subject line. All complaints about the show can be sent to nick.noble@mail.wvu.edu. On behalf of Tim Lawson, I'm Dan Yost. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back again soon. Thank you.